Om Manjana Chimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dadati Svapadantikam Ajnana Niradirupaiti Yaya Vishesham Bhakti Parati Bhajate Pariposhamuchai Tatvam Param Spurati Durga Mamatya Jasram Sadgunya Vritsvarachitam Pranamami Gitam Vyavahita Pritanam Mukham Virikshya Svajana Vadhadvi Mukhasya Dosha Bhutya Kumati Maharadatma Vidyayayas Charanarati Paramasya Tasya Mestu Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Vanshakalpatarubhyasya, Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha I offer my respectful obeisances to the Gita, which was spoken by the Lord, who is endowed with perfect qualities. It is a work by which the ocean of ignorance meets its complete end, by which pure bhakti becomes fully nourished to the highest degree, and by which the supreme truth, normally difficult to understand, becomes eternally manifest. Okay, anything important we learned this morning? What was that? Transcendental knowledge is given by the spiritual master, yes. Yes, Akinchana. Okay, we heard how to acquire that knowledge. Knowledge was compared to a boat. Yes. And also to other things?
A fire.
And? A sword. It's a, and what else? A sword to cut. To cut what?
Illusion.
And especially we will see now, to cut the doubts. To cut the doubts. There is a nice quote in the, found in Srimad Bhagavatam. Parikshit Maharaj is speaking about that boat. He says, taking the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, my grandfather Arjuna and others crossed the ocean of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, in which such commanders as Bhishmadev resembled great fish that could very easily have swallowed them. By the mercy of Lord Krishna, my grandfathers crossed this ocean, which was very difficult to cross, as easy as one steps over the hoof print of a calf. Ten canto. Very good. So any questions from this morning? Or from before? Jagat Guru Prabhu, you had some questions or not? Previous section, okay? In which chapter? Yeah, use the microphone. In the section?
In the section of Karma Yoga, and then there are four sections. Finally, now we read it. Shloka 34.
You can't see the transcendental knowledge in that chapter.
Since like all of a sudden I started speaking about transcendental knowledge, which exactly it was spoken about in the previous chapter.
Yeah. In the very beginning of the chapter, there was transcendental knowledge in the sense that Krishna explained that knowledge comes from Him. This is the transcendental knowledge, knowledge that comes from Him. That was the very beginning of the chapter. If you remember, it was how knowledge descends. Chapter 4. It said that it comes through Guru Parampara, and I am the origin of that knowledge, and I give that knowledge. And then he explained who can receive that knowledge, and so on. They didn't understand the question? Can you repeat your question?
I just could not see some connection in the shlokas, how are they speaking about transcendental knowledge, especially section before this,
Tadvidi Pranipatena.
Beginning from 16th shloka, it's I cannot understand the connection between.
Okay, so we can go back. Let's go back. Let's go back. Okay, in the third chapter, so let's go back. There is a whole series of things here. Chapter 1 and 2. First, there was the doubts by Arjuna. Okay? He had so many doubts. He didn't want to fight because he had doubts. Doubts of what would be the result of that fight. Compassion, he was feeling. And then he didn't know who will win. And whether there would be sinful reactions. What else was there? Whether this would bring him enjoyment or not. So he had all these doubts. And Krishna started smashing his doubts and delivering transcendental knowledge from the very beginning, giving him some knowledge. First he gave him the knowledge of the soul. You remember? That in second chapter, 11 to 30. That was the knowledge of the soul. But then after that, he also explained him the science of karma. You remember there was a section on karma kanda. First he told him, you're not this body, blah, 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 to defeat his compassion and all this. But then he encouraged him to act, to fight, to do his duty as a kshatriya. And the first thing, we have to understand always that Krishna is explaining that yoga ladder. When he didn't want to fight, he was in vikarma. That's where Arjuna was. He didn't want to do his duty. That was vikarma. So Krishna elevates him to the next step and he preaches karma kanda. No, you should fight because you want to enjoy now. That's what you say. I'm going to suffer. I want to enjoy. I'm not going to enjoy. So understanding his mentality, he told him, you do karma. You have to do your duty if you want to enjoy. So he explained that. And that way, yeah, you just do your duty, and that way you will not incur sin, and you will get enjoyment. But this was not actually what Krishna, this is not the most intelligent thing to do, to just act for enjoyment. So then after that, Krishna explained Buddhi Yoga. Buddhi Yoga means that you act, you do your duty, but not for enjoyment. You do it to achieve a higher purpose because you are not this body I told you before. So you should achieve liberation. You should get disentangled from these the reactions. There are actions. Whenever you do something, there is action. That's why people act. Otherwise, nobody would do anything. So he told him that it is better. It's better to act with intelligence, connecting oneself, understanding what is the goal. So that was the whole idea. But in the beginning of chapter 3, Arjun was confused. He said, first, he confused because he understood Buddhi Yoga. This must be, when you talk of intelligence, this must be Jnana Yoga. He thought that Buddhi Yoga meant the Jnana that Krishna had revealed before. That you just use your intelligence. So he couldn't understand. He thought that this Buddhi Yoga means some path of inaction. That was the first conclusion. And therefore, Krishna explained in chapter 3 that no, actually, action is superior to inaction. That's what he explained. Action is superior to inaction. Better than acting in for sense gratification is acting with the spirit of sacrifice. Sacrifice for Vishnu. And this is better than just speculating and trying to figure out to come to the level of knowledge through speculation, which is the Jnana Marg. It's better you try to come to the level of knowledge by doing your duty. It will bring you to the same place. But it is better. And then he expanded on that knowledge in chapter 3, chapter 4. He explained what is that karma yoga. So we saw many aspects of it. In what mentality you must be, the nishkam, you have to come to that nishkam bhav, not desiring the fruit. And then lately we saw all the different yajnas that are available that you can do. So you keep doing some things, but for the purpose of attaining the truth. And the result of all this is to bring us to knowledge. So first there is knowledge of the soul, and then there is transcendental knowledge, which is beyond the knowledge of the soul. Knowledge of the relationship of the soul with the Absolute. But that knowledge, to get it, you cannot just do these karmas and so on. It's fine. But you have to take a spiritual master. And he is the one who is actually going to deliver the transcendental knowledge. So that's what he said, evam parampara praptam, that I give all this knowledge. So, in one sense, everything we heard, there are different levels of knowledge. So everything that Krishna explains, that is knowledge. The knowledge of the yajnas, the knowledge of this, the knowledge of that. But the transcendental knowledge, it means for one who wants to advance further and he wants to actually connect himself with the Absolute Truth. So when we want that, we have to surrender to a spiritual master. And this theme of transcendental knowledge, it appeared now in chapter 4. You have to follow the Guru Parampara. You have to surrender to a spiritual master. But Krishna is not going to continue with this because Arjuna is still confused about whether he should act or he should not act. And when you surrender to the spiritual master, you can't be in that mood that should I do what he say or should I not do what he say. First, we should be fully convinced that action is the path. That's the way. And from the very beginning, what Krishna has been doing is to completely deny non-action. And he has taught us to see inaction. How? By acting in the spirit of sacrifice to achieve the absolute truth with full detachment, we actually do nothing in the sense that we do not get any reactions. And this is the real path of inaction. And not just renouncing the world like the Mayavadi sannyasis do, and just speculate and try to figure out to come to that transcendental position through mental speculation of trying to detach the mind from the body, from the senses, and then try to understand oneself above the mind and try to understand oneself. It is a process. It's not that it's not a process, but it's not the process that Krishna wants us to take. And we will just study now in chapter 5 why it's not the process that he wants us to take. It's dangerous, and not only this, but it's very incomplete. So he has been telling us all that and giving us the details of this karma yoga and how to come from the platform of karma slowly to sakam karma yoga and then nishkam karma yoga. So he has been explaining that initially people will do the sacrifice because they understood they should follow some process, but they will sacrifice to the demigods. But this is not what Krishna actually wants. He wants them to sacrifice to him. Because he is the root, he is the source, he is the creator. He is the one who has devised all this system of animation. So we should understand that we should make him as the goal. It can be both. Yeah. Take the thing here. She's asking that in the chapter 4, or did 4, when Krishna says that sacrifice in knowledge is better than sacrifice of possessions. So what does he mean by sacrifice of possessions? Is it karma kanda or is it karma yoga? It can be both. Like when we say when you give to anatta, you know, lie and all these things, it's karma kanda. In the sense that you are not sacrificing for Vishnu, you are just giving to some good cause and something. And usually why they do that? It's with the expectation of return. So you can also give, so Prabhupada explained that if you donate with the expectation of return, you will get a material result. And if you donate nishkam without expectation, then you will get a transcendental result. So it depends on your mood always. It depends on the mood, whether you are fruitive or you are not fruitive. So this donation, this sacrifice of possessions, it can bring two results. If it is done without knowledge for sense gratification, it will bring material result. And if it is done with knowledge for a higher purpose, then it will bring a transcendental result.
The part that I'm confused about is why, because Lord Krishna is denouncing why we should not be inactive. And here it's saying that somebody, the person's knowledge is better than one sacrifice material possessions. But the person who sacrificed material possessions could be a karma yoga who's offering to Vishnu. So why the yoga level is younger and higher, even if Krishna doesn't want us to follow the path? I can understand it's not a high moral goodness, but if Krishna's not recommending it, how come we can't decide?
What he says is sacrifice in knowledge, with knowledge. So like you say, when you sacrifice your possessions, with knowledge that you want to achieve the absolute truth, you know, So that kind of thing is higher. It is counted as knowledge. This is one thing that we saw, is that how karma, when it is done for the right purpose, it transforms into knowledge. This is the whole idea, that karma transforms into knowledge. So the path of knowledge as we know it is the path of just sitting and speculating and thinking about things. And Krishna does not recommend that path. He recommends that we work. And by working, we will achieve the same knowledge that the speculators achieve. But the path is safer. And plus, the other idea is that, we will see that it's coming in chapter 5, is that by going through mental speculation and this path of jnana, mostly the idea which is developed is impersonal. Whereas when you go through karma, the sacrifice is for Vishnu, so from the very beginning, there is a personal concept. And when you speculate and sit and do nothing, there is that concept of inaction, which is also contrary to real spiritual life. Because in the Vaikuntha planets, it's full of activity. So this whole path of knowledge is just taking you to the wrong side. Or there is a good chance that it will take you to the wrong side.
I can understand that, but then I just don't see why jnana is higher than yoga.
It's higher in the sense that that it involves the mode of goodness. It's higher in that sense. That it involves the mode of goodness, and those who practice jnana yoga, if they are situated properly, but understand that they are detached, they have achieved detachment. Whether the karma yogi is trying to achieve detachment, when he comes in jnana yoga, then he is detached. He is actually detached.
But in jnana yoga, he wants to merge.
Actually, the Jnana Yoga doesn't teach you how to merge exactly. It teaches you to disidentify yourself from the material body. But the merging idea, it's a great danger. It's a tendency, it's some kind of, you know, there is a great chance that you will lean towards that as a goal. But as we heard, there are different kinds of Sankhyas. And there is one Sankhya which is atheistic and which leans towards impersonalism. But otherwise, Sankhya means that you actually find the soul, and you go further and try to understand what is the source of the soul and so on. So it's not the practice in itself, it's not stamped from the beginning that the goal is impersonal. But by that practice, unfortunately, there is a good chance that you will misunderstand. That's why Krishna does not recommend that path. He doesn't recommend it because it requires pure, really being like in goodness, which usually people are not, and also because there's a tendency that because of inaction. So how will you develop devotion without inaction? It's a process which doesn't have the activities of devotion. Yeah. But in itself, it's meant to make one understand the soul. Yeah. Yes.
Actually, I have one. In the karma yoga, the traditional meaning of this kama nishkama is they worship, that means they do the sacrifice for Krishna, but they have more faith on the system. That means the bhakti level is there, you know, not much actually. And by doing that activity, that means from sakama to nishkama, they transform, their antakarana will be purified. That means from the lower modes they will be purified to the goodness, and so they will come to the fully jnana platform, so they will get rid of the all the activities. So in that stage they will progress to the jnana. The like that it is, we can compare. That means karma yoga and the other. Karma yoga and the jnana yoga. But actually the traditional meaning is they have more faith on the system. That means if I do sacrifice, so that I will be purified. That means from the karma. But they don't have much bhakti like how we have. That means devotees is
there. No, that's a different... Yeah, no, bhakti is not there. It is there. Some activities of devotion, of worship are there.
Not having any bhakti, but jnani yogi is having me. That means purified stage. That means you are telling him, that means he will be fully knowledge.
Yeah, it's the one is able to when there is no more attachment. The Giran Lova level platform is one has really come to the conclusion that he is not this body. The Karma Yogi is working for that. He's working to achieve that realization. And when the conviction becomes strong enough, then he is able to actually give up all these activities and sit down, because he's more identified with the soul than with the body. So he's able to sit down and now study and try to apply his intellect to differentiate himself from the material body and actually get a realization on the transcendental platform. The jnanis, they also meditate. Meditate means they stop all activity and they observe their thoughts and their thought process, and you know, that's what they do, the jnanis. The difference with the meditation of the jnanis and the ashtangis is that the ashtangis, they are given the subject of meditation. It's Lord Vishnu. You meditate on the form of Lord Vishnu. But the jnanis, they also sit, they think, they philosophize, they contemplate, they observe the movements of the mind. Yes. So you still don't understand why it's higher?
Because it seems someone who's on Nishkam, who is detached from food, right? Nishkam is detached from food.
Yeah. Well, that's what Krishna says.
Direct relations with the God, that means I am giving my Krishna and all who's, and that is not, he is not having.
One who
is
going for
that is the traditional meaning of the Nishkam Karma Yogi.
You know, when, let's say like this, that when the Nishkam Karma Yogi is perfected, like he has become so detached by the practice of always sacrificing, not remaining attached to his things, he comes to the level of knowledge. He comes to the level of knowledge. And by the practice of Jnana Yoga, he can further purify. The point is that first you become detached from your possessions, then you become detached from your body. But there is further than that. You have to become detached from the mind. You have to become detached from all, so many things to actually get the transcendental realization. So this is done by the process of Gyan. It's Gyan or it's Ashtanga, where you actually go within yourself. You are no more attached to your possessions. You are not attached to your relations. You are not attached to your anything outside. But within, there is still a knot between the soul and the material elements. And that knot has to be cut. It has to be cut. So for this, the method of Jnana Yoga is there. through intelligence to somehow see oneself, not just think oneself, but see oneself as different from the body. Well, usually the point that Krishna says is that this jnana is not really useful to practice it on its own. One should not give up work. That's what Krishna says. You should not give up work. But you can add some jnana yoga. You can add that. You can add some of the practices. Even in as devotees, we have practices which come from the jnana platform. We use what is useful from the jnana. We use it on the path of bhakti. So, yes, we also study. We also, philosophize. We also do all these things. So we use some of the aspects of jnana to understand, to elevate our consciousness and understand who we are. Yeah. We also do that. But to go just on the path of jnana, Krishna never recommends that in the Bhagavad Gita. Although the consciousness, he doesn't recommend that. That's all. You will see that after chapter 5, it moves in Ashtanga Yoga. It doesn't move into jnana. It denies that path. She is too dukhi. Yes.
So in the graduate path, the person that teaches jnana, he's meant to do ashtanga. Is he meant to do ashtanga?
Yeah, he can. Yes, that's good. He can.
He's not meant to just get stuck on that. That's why.
Yes. From jnana, the correct path from jnana, if you go via that, the correct path from jnana is from jnana you go to ashtanga. And if one has practiced jnana, if the one who is doing karma yoga, if he goes from karma yoga to ashtanga, what he does is that we said there is yoga rurukshu and yoga rudha. So if one comes from karma yoga, he goes in the initial stages of ashtanga yoga, he continues working for some time. And side by side, he takes up the practice of ashtanga yoga, he starts doing the asanas and so on. And then when he becomes more purified and detached, he gives up the work altogether and he does only the asanas. And after some time, he gives up the asanas and he retains one asana in which he has perfected his position and in which he can meditate. And this is Yoga Rudha, where he just focuses and meditates on Lord Vishnu. He meditates on Lord Vishnu. So the jnani, if one practices this jnana yoga in between, so what happens is that from jnana yoga, he is not going to go to the initial stages so much of ashtanga yoga. He is going to go straight to dhyana, because he has already, through the process of jnana, he has already steadied his mind, and he has already, entered the field of working with the subtle parts of the self. So he moves on to Ashtanga Yoga, higher aspects of Ashtanga Yoga. So it is there. From Gyan, he moves on to Ashtanga. But Krishna warns, because there is a tendency due to this, that he might go for, he might have an impersonal understanding. So it's better to just go straight to Ashtanga. Is it getting better? Anything else? Yes? Sorry?
To conclude with my question, this chapter is... So, because everything we need from the second chapter is also transcendental knowledge. This chapter especially...
It's knowledge. Transcendental knowledge specifically refers to going beyond knowing that we are not the body. Just knowing that we are not the body, it's not enough. It's just the beginning. It's the very beginning of transcendental knowledge. What the guru does, of course he gives that knowledge, but the guru knows how to take us further than that, into the transcendental atmosphere.
This is a distinct point of this chapter from that we discussed, this was Krishna spoke about previously. This shloka about Guru, Krishna, Sharma Guru.
Yeah.
So that's what made the difference. This transcendental knowledge and this transcendental knowledge. So
that and this, what do you mean that and this?
The point which makes this chapter is higher, this knowledge is higher than that's what it was discussed before.
Yes, yes. We should accept the Guru Parampara, yes. But, in the beginning, Krishna already accepted, Arjuna already accepted Krishna as his Guru. That's how he is getting knowledge. So this is the beginning anyway. This is the very beginning. Arjuna surrendered to Krishna and now he is explaining him everything step by step. You are not this body and you should work. And there are different ways to work. If you work for yourself, for material enjoyment, you get all the reaction, you get entangled in this world. So you should work for me. But there is a gradual path for that. You should work with the spirit of sacrifice. First develop all this detachment. Develop. Because you have to reach the point of understanding you're not this body. Which is what Krishna tells him first. You're not this body. But how to reach the point of realizing this? So the way to realize this is you do your work and you give up the fruit. You just give up the fruit. Give up the fruit. Give up the fruit. And by practicing this consistently, you will get rid of the rajogun, which attaches us to matter, the fruit. I want it, you know. So by giving up the fruit, the rajogun will go away. And by working out of duty, the sattvagun will grow, because regulation is... symptom of sattvagun. So you be regulated, sattvagun will increase. You give up the fruit, rajogun will decrease. And then you come to the level of knowledge. That's what he is explaining. But once you come to the level of knowledge and you know you're not this body, once you know that, then what to do? So Krishna says, now you take a guru. And what's the use of a materialist to take a guru who will ask him, how are you, Gurudev? The materialist is not going to know what to ask the guru. Only one who has come to the level of knowledge. One who has come to the level of understanding, I'm not this body. He will ask the proper questions to the guru. I'm not this body. Yes. So now if you want, after that point that you have come to the mode of goodness and you know you're not this body, now you need a guru to go further, to transcend. So the relationship between me, the soul, and the absolute, that is revealed by the spiritual master. And that is called transcendental knowledge.
was discussed before the shloka, we cannot say 100% transcendental knowledge. So only from the point accepting guru is the transcendental knowledge starts.
In the Gita, you mean? No.
Yes, in the Gita, in my life.
Yeah, in one sense, it starts by accepting the spiritual master when we get transcendental knowledge.
But not by exact initiation, because even before initiation, we may accept.
We said that the essence of this relationship with the guru is siksha. And there are many gurus. So before we come to the point of taking diksha, we may have met already many people who have fed us knowledge. The only thing with diksha is that when we take diksha, it's mostly that before, you know, we were more or less dedicated to actually go to the transcendental platform and perfect our life. But diksha means that now you surrender. You surrender to guru means that you really decide that now I am getting out of here. This is diksha. I'm not staying in this world anymore. I've made my decision, I have understood, and now I'm going out of here. This is diksha, that you promise. And why we promise? Because as long as we don't promise, you'll do it one day, you won't do it the next day. You know, so diksha means we fully accept the ruling of Krishna. We were under the ruling of the Trigunas, and when we take diksha, we consciously make the decision to now not be anymore under the ruling of the Trigunas. And the Trigunas means to do what my mind says. And when we surrender to the Guru, then we do what the Guru says. You know, in general, in details, or in general, or whatever. But we change the account. We come under the Guru Parampara. So it's different. Our activities become transcendental. But otherwise, knowledge begins, you know, knowledge is always with us. It is covered. And by following all these methods that Krishna gives, this knowledge is uncovered. So it gradually, Krishna said several times, gradually it uncovers. It uncovers until the point where it is so much uncovered that now you just want to work for that only. You don't want anything else anymore. So we should practice like that, to that point when we come that we, you know, we actually want only to achieve Krishna, transcendental goal. So it's not that just the day you take initiation, suddenly it starts. But it's a personal decision.
Just to add a point discussed before. Jnana and Vairagya, they develop side by side.
Yes.
And they're interdependent.
Yes.
So when one starts to renounce sacrifice, so they open up Jnana.
Right.
And then Jnana comes, he can learn it.
Yes.
Renounce.
Yes.
So this is how.
Yeah, so by working and giving up the fruit, the renunciation comes. And along with renunciation and all the methods of regulation, so the knowledge comes. Yes?
Is Krishna recommending the gradual path, or is it just for us to understand the final is to surrender everything to Him? For us to understand that there are different paths, but better than all these paths is the direct path. So
yeah.
You're going to say it in the end that rather than going all these
He's giving us the whole Vedic view.
But right now we don't have any Vedic view right now. For example, you cannot find a person saying I'm following Karma Yoga because they don't even know who is Krishna is.
He's giving us the whole Vedic view, and well, people, as we said, that's why in this age we don't it's very difficult to follow that path. You can hardly follow it because you need so many elements which are no longer present. The Vedas are not there, the mantras are not there, the Brahmanas are not there, you know, so many things are not there to practice, and the natural living is not there. So many things. So Krishna is giving us this view because that's the Vedic view. He is not just speaking the Bhagavad Gita. It's eternal. He said, I have spoken this before. He is not just speaking the Bhagavad Gita for Kali Yuga. Yes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks the Gita for Kali Yuga. He tells us what to do in Kali Yuga.
But I also see there is a disadvantage of this because my father, after hearing this, he said, I will follow Karma Yuga.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Basically, he doesn't have anything.
Most people never go beyond the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
They find it very fine. They just go, they read the third chapter, and they think, that's it, I have arrived.
Actually, this is anything there. So whoever wants any fruit, so you go over
right. This is the Kalpavriksha. It is the Kalpavriksha of the Vedas. And what Krishna is explaining is that if you are at this level, that you want material enjoyment, then go for the karma kanda thing. Do it. It's good for you. It's good. And if you are at another level that you want the truth, you know, but you are attached. You don't want to give up anything. You just want to do the same thing. But you understand that. Okay, do karma yoga. That's good for you. Good, good. You do that. Huh? So only the jnanis, he warns that be careful. This is a dangerous path. And he will also defeat this Ashtanga Yoga. That's also very difficult, you will say. That's also very difficult. So he's presenting this whole thing. And you are right to say, this is what Narada Muni did with Vyasadeva. He said, why you wrote all these things? Why you gave them all this choice? Because naturally, with their tendency to enjoy, they will choose the things that is in their favor. So Narada Muni was chastising. But this is the teaching of the Paramahamsa who comes and says, no. You know, but the point is that we want enjoyment. That's why we came here. And Krishna satisfies our desires because that's the way he works. He's our servant and he satisfies our desires. This is the way it is. This is the relationship between us and him. He has Ichashakti, we have Ichashakti. But our Ichashakti can become overwhelmed by ignorance. So, but with whatever we desire, Krishna fulfills. We want it to be separate from him. Krishna said, that's fine. I'm not a tyrant that you have to follow me. You don't want to follow? Okay, so he created this world for us. So because we want to enjoy, so Krishna says, okay, this is how you do it. If you want to enjoy, this is how you do it. But at the same time, he knows that this is not going to make us happy because our constitutional position is different and it can't be changed, sanatana. Our constitutional position cannot be changed. And Krishna knows that. So he ropes in so many things, you know, that you do your work, but then this, that, and in the end, you surrender back to Krishna. But it is a fact that many people never go beyond the third chapter. You know, they understand, okay, I should do my work. You know, and in India it's very common. Most of the people think like this, and they also think that it's bhakti. I do my work, you know, I enjoy, I have all my rights. Huh? Work is worship, yes. This is how I worship Vishnu, by my duties. I just do my work. This is how I worship Vishnu. So this is the lower understanding. It's higher than just working for sense gratification, but still, karma yoga is not the top. That's why it's not at the top of the ladder. It's down. It's not the top. It's not a complete understanding. Because it does not entail the understanding that I am not this body and actually I should just work for Krishna, not for myself. Not, I should not maintain myself. Who is the maintainer? Krishna is the maintainer. That's the conclusion I should come to, that Krishna is the maintainer. He is the maintainer. So there is no need for me to make all this extra endeavor to maintain myself. I should just work for him. But this conclusion is only achieved by those who have achieved jnana, who know that they are not the body. Otherwise they cannot do that. Because I'm not sure. Maybe I'm a little bit the body. What about when I'm old? I will certainly be the body. Where will I park it? Who will feed it? Yeah, we'll park it. It's a car. So unless one is fully realized, so then it's difficult to apply. So the result of karma yoga is to understand we are not this body. And from there begins spiritual life, actual, active spiritual life. You can surrender to a guru. And you can take up the transcendental path of really not working in the world realm of matter for just satisfying yourself or catering to the maintenance of the body, but just work directly for spiritual achievement with a full understanding, with full consciousness. So Krishna has been explaining that all the yajñas, and look, the karmas and the yajñas, they lead to that conclusion. What conclusion? Surrender to Guru. They lead to that conclusion. So that I could actually develop myself as a spiritual entity. Not just as a material entity, but as a spiritual entity. So that's where we are at. In Krishna consciousness, sitting at the feet of Prabhupada, we are here to develop ourselves as a spiritual entity. And the process of devotional service is higher than the process of karma yoga. Because there is already that understanding. In karma yoga, it's not there. You want to achieve it. In bhakti, you have already understood. And now you want. What do we want? We want to know which servant of Krishna we are. We know we are servant of Krishna. We want to know which servant. Am I, a gopi making garlands? Am I a gopa running after the Surabhi cows? Am I a tree shedding flowers when Krishna passes? This is our inquiry as devotees. If you read Prabhupada's book properly, this is what we are after. We want to know our spiritual identity. And for this, we need the guidance of the spiritual master. Anything more? Jagat Guru Prabhu? So we will finish this chapter 4 and start the chapter 5. Lately, what did we hear? that transcendental knowledge, which is beyond this material body, knowledge of our relationship with the Absolute, this is obtained from the spiritual master. And then Krishna praised that knowledge, what it does, such a beautiful thing. It will take us out of complete illusion forever. No, never returning to illusion. He's talking of realized knowledge, to realize things which are beyond this world. And then he gave us the qualities of who can get that knowledge. He said there should be faith. There should be faith. Anything else was there? Dedication. And there should be the endeavor to control the senses. So, if you know, these are aspects of the qualities of one who can make progress in spiritual life. Then in verse 40, he explains who are those who cannot get that transcendental knowledge. Not that everyone can get it. So, this is the verse that he gives here. Anyascha sraddhadhanascha samchayatma vinashyati nayam lokosti naparo nasukham samchayatmanaha. So different things he's saying here. Agyas, ashraddhadana, and samchayatma. Three different things. But ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. So who doesn't get that transcendental knowledge? Who cannot make progress towards the absolute truth beyond this body? First, the ignorant. And Prabhupada defines this as the one who has no knowledge. He doesn't know about the scriptures. He doesn't read them. Has never heard them. So such person, he doesn't know anything. So such person obviously also doesn't know that he should surrender to the Guru. He has never read that. He has never studied the Bhagavad Gita. He doesn't know what should be done. So such person obviously is blocked. But of course such person, at some point, he can get that knowledge. If he becomes interested, if somebody tells him, he gets some mercy. However, there is the second one, the one who is faithless. So this one, he may have the knowledge. He has read the Shastras. He has read the Shastra, but he has no faith. Prabhupada said there are so many people who know by heart. They can recite. Here in India we have, it's quite common, people who can recite many verses, scriptures, you know. But like parrot. But the faith in the scripture, and when there is faith, there is a impetus to follow what is written. But if there is no faith, there is no impetus to follow. So that is a second type of person. It's not enough to know the Shastra. One must have faith in the Shastra so that there will be the impetus to follow. Then there is another one, the Samshayatma, one who is always doubtful. Is always doubtful, meaning that he may have read the Shastra and he does have some faith in the Shastra, but many doubts. So many doubts. Always it comes inside, oh, How can that be? And especially Prabhupada says, if he doubts that Krishna is God, he has faith in Bhagavad Gita, it's a great book, but not sure that Krishna is God. Not sure. So when there are doubts, like on key points of the knowledge that is given by the Shastra, so that is also a block. Because that one, even though one initially had faith, so started practicing, but if there are too many doubts and big doubts, then it can be swayed away. Little doubt is good. In fact, doubting is a function of the intelligence. So having some doubts is not a problem. It's a sign of intelligence. And that's also why there is pariprashnena, that you ask the questions to clear the doubts. So doubt is a good thing. Usually it helps us move to the next point of understanding. But the point is that the doubts have to be destroyed. They have to be killed through the process of inquiry. And Krishna will tell us even more in the next verse how these doubts can be cleared. So doubts in general, we clear them through the process of inquiry, but Krishna says something more here in 41. Yoga sanyasya karmanam jnana sanchinna samchayam atmavantam na karmani nivadnanti dhananjaya. How to destroy the doubts? Because Krishna said, out of all the above mentioned persons, those who have no faith and are always doubtful make no progress at all. So it is very important to destroy the doubts. It's really a block. One who acts in devotional service or in karma yoga, Prabhupada says yoga means by devotional service in karma yoga. So one who acts in devotional service or in karma yoga, renouncing the fruits of his action and whose doubts have been destroyed by transcendental knowledge, is situated factually in the self. Thus, he is not bound by the reactions of work. O conqueror of riches. So how does Prabhupada understand this? How do we destroy doubts? You say by transcendental knowledge? By what? By inquiry? By following. This is what Prabhupada says. By following. Meaning that you may have a doubt. It's okay to have a doubt. But what should not happen is that because of the doubt, we stop our service. That because of the doubt, we stop our karma yoga, whatever we are doing. We should not stop the process. Because the process of developing knowledge is to serve. It is to work for Vishnu. So if you stop that because you have a doubt, the doubt will never clear. This itself is the process to get rid of the doubt. It is the process to obtain knowledge. So Prabhupada says, one who follows the instruction of the Gita as it is imparted by the Lord becomes free from all doubts by the grace of transcendental knowledge. So there will be a grace if we continue to practice. If we continue to practice, in spite of some doubts, we must practice. Otherwise, the doubts will be like animals that carry us away. We should work on clearing the doubts. the result of working, continuing to serve, will be that we will get knowledge which is free from doubts. So this is the path that Krishna is giving. Yeah. Yeah, she says for a newcomer there are more doubts than determination.
Like you often hear people saying, you know, I don't want to become vegetarian.
But they are unfortunate. They are unfortunate. But fortunately in Bhakti Yoga we have so many means, like even if they just agreed to take prasadam, that's why in Bhakti there is so much mercy. If they don't want to do, they don't want to chant, they don't want at least eat prasadam. But that's the point. If someone has too many doubts, it means there is not enough sukriti that has been developed from before. There's no karma sukriti, there's no gyan sukriti. It is not there. So it's difficult to force it. But that is the power of the spiritual master, that he can change such person. He can make them change. Because very powerful. That's what Prabhupada did. And when he was in the West, at some point after studying the Bhagavad Gita, the devotees realized, wow, we are papis. We are vikarmis. How come, Prabhupada, it says in the Bhagavad Gita that when one is free from all sins, he takes up devotional service. And we are sinful people. From childhood, practically, we were born in a sinful condition. And we are engaged in so many sinful activities. You know, so Prabhupada told them that. So they said, where is our good fortune? By looking at our life, it doesn't seem that we have any good fortune. We were born in sinful families. We were never told anything that was right. And we engaged in all kinds of sinful activities. So where is our good fortune? You know, one who has good fortune, he takes birth in a favorable situation. And we took birth in sinful situation. So we have no good fortune. Then Prabhupada said, I created your good fortune. So this is what the spiritual master does, that he creates the good fortune. He has that power to create the good fortune. If he prays, one of the main jobs of the spiritual master is that he prays for his disciples. This is one of the main works of the spiritual master. Because the spiritual master is connected with Krishna, he already has a relationship, and as we know, though devotees who are very advanced, they control Krishna. Krishna listens to them. He doesn't listen to us necessarily always. But the more we are advanced, the more Krishna listens. And he will fulfill the desires of his pure devotees. So the spiritual master, he prays for his foolish disciples. Please deliver them. Please deliver this person. We don't know. Sometimes you go, somebody comes, you know, and speaks with the guru for the first time, comes and is completely confused, you know, and speaks with the spiritual master and it looks like a stupid conversation. But within, the spiritual master is praying, oh my Lord, please deliver this fool, you know. And then soon after the meeting, even though they did not exchange any spiritual thoughts, the person starts chanting. And this is the mercy of the spiritual master. So this is the...
In 39 verse there is described Shraddha Vallabhate Jnanam.
Yeah.
Then for achieve Jnan, which kind of Shraddha required here?
Faith, we said there is, yes, Prabhupada said...
But you know, karmic can play that. You know, in cause faith should be informed, and by that we can, you know, achieve Jnana, and Jnani can claim, and you know, anyone.
You are talking of faith in the process.
Yes.
Yeah, there should be faith in the process. But higher than just the faith in the process is to have the faith in the Guru. Faith in Shastra, and then you have faith in the Guru. You should also have faith in the spiritual master. Huh? Everyone?
They have also faith in Guru and Shastra.
Prabhupada defines faith. There are different types of faith. And Prabhupada defines faith as trust in something sublime. Faith means faith in the Lord, faith in God, faith in the Absolute Person. That is the topmost faith. Because otherwise you can have faith in so many things. I have faith that the sun will rise tomorrow.
Karma Yoga and Gyan Yoga is described by Krishna.
Yeah.
And they have also faith in Krishna in Shastra.
But they don't have that spark. The faith is the spark of understanding oneself as part of Krishna. It's the faith of transcendental knowledge. They have to have that faith of understanding themselves as not this body and part of Krishna. They have to have that faith. If they don't have faith in Krishna, then they have to have faith in that goal. So faith is something, you know, as you say, the karmis, they have faith in something, the jnanis have faith in something else. When we want to go towards the path of complete self-realization, we have to have faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we have to have faith in the Guru as the representative of that person. And we have to develop gradually faith in the path of bhakti. Like that. Bhakti Lata Beej. So it's not enough to have faith in Karma Yoga. You have to go further than that. You have to develop higher faith. Cultivate the faith. And the faith evolves with the knowledge. It evolves with the knowledge you acquire. And the faith evolves by association. So if you have associate with jnanis who are Mayavadis, you will develop faith in merging. You will develop faith in personalism. So it's by association that we develop faith. Yes? Yeah, so it depends. Yes?
In this verse, I was thinking like what Krishna is saying about faith here. Isn't it that by dutifully and faithfully doing this, like the faith that doing this dutiful attachment will bring higher
faith in the process.
Isn't that the faith that Krishna is in this verse?
Yes. Yeah. Prabhupada says faith in the Shastra, it's faith in the process, faith that what Krishna is saying is right, faith that there is a transcendental goal to achieve. You know, faith in general is something, faith is some kind of perception that there is something else.
Yeah, that's the general comment in the second chapter.
Yeah.
But I was thinking in this context, where it appears it's words, isn't Krishna actually saying, work faithfully in a detached manner, Arjuna, so that knowing that it will actually bring
faith in the process. Prabhupada says, faithful person who believes firmly in Krishna. He has to be faithful, he has to believe in what the Shastras say, he has to believe in the process that he is following, and he has to have faith that he is going to achieve some transcendental goal. What is the difference exactly with what did I say else?
No, Mataji. Like if someone has faith in Karma Yoga,
yeah.
By that, here he described one thing more, Param Jnanam Labdha, and by that Jnan, Param Santim Labdha, Adhigacchati, Achirena
Andhra.
That means if someone has faith in Karma Yoga, by that process, they cannot get Param Santi, Param Jnan.
If he has faith in Karma Yoga?
Yes. And by that process, he cannot get, you know, supreme transcendental knowledge.
Why?
Karma Yoga. You cannot get Achirena means, you know.
Very soon.
Very soon, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Very
and
soon.
By Jnana Yoga, he also he cannot get very soon.
I don't understand exactly what you say here. A faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge. Haribol, what's happening? Sadakarji?
The ladder, when climbing the ladder, the second step itself, he again falls down. We have to climb so many steps. If we confine to only one karma yoga, karma karma step in there.
Yeah. Okay. You explain me clearly after the class what is your doubt about this thing here. So, should we move on or there are more questions here? We saw this, the person will not achieve that transcendental knowledge lacking faith in the Shastras, having doubts, and we saw that to eradicate these doubts, one should continue following the process, because that's the way to achieve that knowledge. And if there's no process, then nothing will move. Then Krishna concludes this section. Tasmad ajnana sambhutam ritstam jnana sinatmana Chitvenam samshayam yogam atishto tishta bharata. Therefore the doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight. Krishna is back on the battlefield here and telling Arjuna if you want to actually obtain all this knowledge, you do your duty. You continue with your duty, and your duty is that to fight. This is how you will be free from all your doubts. So Prabhupada explains that the yoga system instructed in this chapter is called Sanatan Yoga, or eternal activities performed by the living entity. This yoga has two divisions of sacrificial actions, which we saw. One is called sacrifice of one's material possessions, and the other is called knowledge of the self, which is pure spiritual activity. If sacrifice of one's material possessions is not dovetailed for spiritual realization, then such sacrifice becomes material. So the goal, I mean, the goal has to always be in front of the mind of what we want to achieve. But one who performs such sacrifices with a spiritual objective or in devotional service makes a perfect sacrifice. So in other words, we should go through this path of karma yoga and simply dedicate our activities for spiritual advancement. Prabhupada says, ignorance can be removed by gradual acceptance of the principles of Krishna consciousness. So if we cannot take directly to Krishna consciousness, then we should accept gradually. Krishna consciousness is awakened by different types of sacrifices to the demigods, sacrifice to Brahman, sacrifice in celibacy, in household life, in controlling the senses, in practicing mystic yoga, in penance, in foregoing material possessions, in studying the Vedas, and in partaking of the social institution called Varnashram Dharma. So this is kind of a summary of what Krishna has told us in the fourth chapter. All of these are known as sacrifice, and all of them are based on regulated action. But within all these activities, the important factor is self-realization. The goal should be clear. One who seeks that objective is a real student of Bhagavad Gita. But one who doubts the authority of Krishna falls back. So you have to we have to fix our mind on the transcendental objective. Now we'll go on for some time. Chapter 5. Guess what? Not only you were confused, Arjun is also confused. Interesting, no? Karma Yoga. This is chapter 5. Karma Yoga, or action in Krishna consciousness. That's Prabhupada's subtitle. Action in Krishna consciousness. The acharyas call this Karma Sannyasa Yoga. Because again, Krishna, Arjuna is going to be asking about, what about giving up this whole thing and going to the forest? So there are... Well, there are different names. Karma, Sannyas, Yoga, that's one
Gyan
name.
Also described.
Yeah. So the different parts of this chapter, from 1 to 6, Arjuna asks some questions and Krishna is going to answer them. So this is called Karma Yoga is easier or superior to renouncing work. Practicing Karma Yoga is superior to renouncing work. This is what Krishna will explain in the first section, which is from 1 to 6. Then from 7 to 12, we will again have the happiness of learning how to perform Karma Yoga. And then we will move to some higher realms. From 13 to 16, we will hear about the nature of the soul and the super soul. So we are moving gradually towards Jnana. Good. Nature of the soul and the super soul. And then 17 to 29, we will hear of liberation by concentration on the super soul. Liberation by concentration on the super soul. What is it? Yeah, Krishna will explain. It's not yet. Then after that, in the sixth chapter, Krishna will explain the process, how to meditate on the Super Soul, and the process of Ashtanga Yoga, to be able, which is the best process, to be able to meditate on the Super Soul. So text 1-6, Karma Yoga, is equal to renouncing work in the sense that it doesn't create any reactions. But it's easier, because the whole idea is we don't want to have any more reactions. Due to the reactions to our works, the next body gets formed. This body is made of the reactions of our previous work. So now we want to stop the cycle of birth and death, meaning we must burn the previous reactions and we must not create any more reactions. So how to do that? Arjuna uvacha sannyasyam karmanam krishna punar yogam chasham sasi Yachreya etayorekam tanme bruhi sunishchitam. You remember this ekam? It was there in chapter 3. Please tell me one thing. Not two, three, just one. One. And Krishna has been telling him from the beginning, just get up and fight. So here, should I do karma yoga or karma sannyas? Karma sannyas means renounce the karma. Just sannyas means to renounce. So should I give up all these karmas or should I do karma yoga? And when he says, should I give up all these karmas, means should I become a jnani and cultivate jnana? Because Krishna said, you know, one who is in knowledge, he has no duties. He said so many things. Prabhupada will give the summary in the purport. So let us hear first what Arjuna says. He is again asking for Shreya. What is the highest good? Tell me for sure. Sunishchitam. Arjuna said, O Krishna, first of all you ask me to renounce work, and then again you recommend work with devotion. With devotion. That's a little bit like an addition. Now will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial? Oh. So how did he get confused? 42. 41 and 42. Yeah. Yeah. Good, good. He says you should do yoga sannyas karmanam. He understood that. And we heard also, just like Rukmini said, that he also said in 4:33 that sacrifice in knowledge is better than sacrifice of one's possessions. Right, right, you see? You agree with Arjun? This is what Krishna said. He said, sacrifice in knowledge is better. Okay, so I should do jnana. And then he said, yoga sannyasta karmanam. Oh, what is that? Actually, Krishna meant you must give up the fruit, but this word, give up, that was interesting. And then he said, jnana sanchina samchayam. You have so many doubts. How to cut the doubts? He said, through knowledge. You should cut your doubts through knowledge. And so Arjuna is getting ready. Yes, yes, I must renounce all these things. I must develop knowledge, which we all understood. We must develop knowledge. That was the message. You have to develop knowledge. You have to develop knowledge. Right? And then he concluded. What was the conclusion? Atishto tishta bharata. Being armed with yoga. Oh, Bharata. Get up. Get up. Like in the movie. In the drama. Get up. Get up. Stand up, he said. Stand up. Because remember what Arjuna was doing? He sat down on the chariot, threw away his bow, and he started like lamenting. So he said, get up, fight. So get up means again, do your duty. Back to Karma Yoga. So on one hand he said, develop knowledge. You have to come to the level of knowledge. You have to kill your doubts through knowledge. The goal of all sacrifices is to develop knowledge. Sacrifice in knowledge is better than sacrifice of the possessions. So it was difficult to understand. Now why in the end he says fight? What has this to do with knowledge? You know, it looks rather than an activity in tamas and rajas. So therefore he says, you tell me for sure what is the best. I want to know that. Should I do karma yoga, means work in knowledge? Or should I do karma sannyas, renunciation of work? So Krishna, in answer to that, he's going to explain how karma yoga is actually a form of inaction, because it does not, this is how you have to reach the platform of akarma. How does it become akarma? How the karma becomes akarma? This is what Krishna is going to explain in this chapter. Prabhupada said, he explains these intricacies here. In the second chapter, preliminary knowledge of the soul and its entanglement in the material body were explained. How to get out of this material engagement by buddhi yoga or devotional service was also explained therein. In the third chapter, it was explained that a person who is situated on the platform of knowledge no longer has any duties to perform. So it seemed that no duties to perform, he understood, means he should stop acting. But then Krishna had explained that no, you continue to give example to others and to remain on that platform. Otherwise you will fall from that platform. And in the fourth chapter, the Lord told Arjuna that all kinds of sacrificial work culminate in knowledge. However, at the end of the fourth chapter, the Lord advised Arjuna to wake up and fight, being situated in perfect knowledge. Therefore, by simultaneously stressing the importance of both work in devotion and inaction in knowledge, Krishna has perplexed Arjuna and us and confused his determination. Arjuna understood that renunciation in knowledge involves cessation of all kinds of work performed as sense activities. So, but that is not the case. Prabhupada is already telling us the truth. One who performs work in devotional service, he cannot see. How can you work and be inactive at the same time? How can you work and not create reactions? He's not understanding that. How can work be equal to knowledge? How can work awaken knowledge? All these questions are there. Work and renunciation appear to be incompatible. When Arjuna thinks of a renounced person, he thinks of somebody sitting in the forest, you know, meditating. That's what he thinks is a renounced person. But Krishna is going to explain that renunciation doesn't mean not to be involved with activity. Renunciation is a consciousness. It's a state of consciousness that is to be achieved. And one who is renounced, he never gets entangled with any of the work that he performs. So from 2 to 6, Krishna gives his reply. His opinion, this is his opinion, that karma yoga is superior to karma sannyas. Both have the same goal, which is liberation. But according to Krishna's opinion, karma yoga, or working, is better. Working for to achieve the absolute, working with detachment, learning to dedicate things to Vishnu and to work for Lord Vishnu's pleasure, this is higher than stopping to work. Did we read it? No. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Sanyasa Karma Yogascha Nishreya Sakara Vubha Tayostu Karma Sanyasat Karma Yogo Vishishyate. The Personality of Godhead replied, the renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation. So he's not completely condemning. But of the two, work in devotional service is better than renunciation of work. And then he's going to explain us why. So both lead to knowledge. And why is that? Prabhupada is going to give us so many reasons, and Krishna is also going to give us some reasons here. Jnana, or knowledge that one is not this material body but spirit soul, is not sufficient for liberation. So it's not, usually the jnanis, they just know that they are not this body. And by separating the activities of the mind from themselves, they situate themselves in that knowledge that I am not this body. They actually see themselves as different from the body. But Prabhupada said this is not sufficient for liberation. In fact, in the Bhagavatam it says that the jnanis, they think themselves to be liberated. Just because they can perceive themselves as different from the body, so they think themselves to be liberated. But that's not enough to achieve liberation. One has to act in the status of spirit soul. Otherwise, there is no escape from material bondage. Because as we heard before, just by breathing, just by walking, just by bathing, just by moving about, we entangle ourselves with the material energy. We kill so many bugs. We do so many things. Even if you do nothing, still we are breathing and killing so many bacteria. So it creates karma. As soon as we are bathing, we are also killing so many germs and things. It creates karma. So it is not possible to escape from material bondage. One has to learn how to work free from reaction. Activities performed in full knowledge strengthen one's advancement in real knowledge. So if we want to strengthen the knowledge, we have to act. Without Krishna consciousness, mere renunciation of fruitive activities does not actually purify the heart of a conditioned soul. So there's no complete purification by just taking the path of jnana and understanding oneself not to be this body. So Prabhupada explains that this work for sense gratification that leads to repeated birth and death. So that should be definitely given up. But it's not that all work should be given up. Because knowledge of just knowing oneself not to be this body, that is incomplete. Usually jnanis, they just come to the point of aham brahmasmi. This is the conclusion of the jnanis. It doesn't go further. Aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi. This is the conclusion of the jnana process. And brahmasmi may mean I am the individual soul, and if they misunderstand a bit, it means I am the Brahman. I am everything. So what does it mean that it does not fully purify the heart just to know oneself as a spirit soul? How is it that it doesn't fully purify the heart? We have to know? Yeah, it doesn't. So, what's the element which is not purified by jnana? The ego. Yeah. Jnana does not completely purify the ego. By karma yoga, one purifies the activities. All the activities are purified. There are no reactions to the activities. And along this, there is a gradual purification of the mind as we become detached and so on. And then by the practice of jnana yoga, the mind is purified. The remnants of material desires are purified. To a great extent, the intelligence is purified because it doesn't anymore work for sense gratification. The jnanis have such powerful determination based on their realization that they are not the body, that somehow they are able to control their senses, and the intelligence is no longer engaged in the service of the senses. So the intelligence is somewhat purified. The mind is purified. There is no more activity. So that seems that, you know, everything is cleared out. But there is one more thing. That is the ahankar, the ego. And as we know, the jnanis do not believe. They think that the ahankar, it's all material. And it's true. So they give up the material ahankar. I am this body. No, I am not this body. They know they are not the body. I am not the mind. I am not the mind. You know. I am not the intelligence. I am not the intelligence. And then this last thing which remains is the sense of I. Aham, aham. Aham. So they think that this aham, that also should be given up. This is a material concept. They think that aham is a material concept. But in the Bhagavatam, Krishna says, aham eva same eva agre, that in the beginning of everything, there was aham. That aham is beyond matter. That principle is not material. It's not a material principle. And it is a personal principle in grammar. It's not an impersonal principle. It doesn't say tat. It's not a thing, it's not this, it's not that. It's a person. So the aham represents the personality, the individuality. And the jnanis think that this aham that is material. So therefore, let's get rid of this. Because Brahm asmi, I am the Supreme. I am that, I merge. They merge in the Supreme by giving up their sense of individuality. So this is not a complete purification. The purification, total purification, is to understand the complete nature of Aham. Aham is not material, it is spiritual. And when it comes to spirituality, the Aham is not the totality. The Aham is a part of the totality. Our Aham, our sense of identity, you know, our identity, it is a part of the whole. And the relationship between the part and the whole is that of service. It's that of service. That's the relationship. And it's not the service of a slave. It's love. It's a position where the relationship between the whole and the part is that of love. So love exists beyond this material world. In fact, it hardly exists in this world. But there is a sense of that. We have relationships with each other. So the Jnani says, this is all Maya. Attachment, you know, the love of the mother for the child. Ooh. The Jnanis cannot relate. They say it's all Maya. It's all a mental body, emotional body. But all these things are reflections of a reality. They are reflections of the true relationships that exist in the spiritual world. There is love in the spiritual world. There is that exchange between so many souls are there, and there is an exchange. And there is a sweetness in that exchange. There's a selflessness in that exchange. There are well wishes. All these things are there. So only when we go through the process of bhakti yoga, which is the perfection of work, then we develop that spiritual identity. We become a servant of Krishna. Then we are completely purified. So, not that we should. So the idea is that on the spiritual platform also there is activity. But the activity is not for oneself. The activity is to please Krishna. So we have to learn to act like this. So the first step is karma yoga, in which you learn not to act for yourself. And the top rung of the ladder is devotional service. Not only you don't do it for yourself, but you do it for Krishna. And not out of duty, out of love. Because Krishna is so beautiful, right? Yesterday there was such beautiful darshan, the flower outfit. So beautiful. Who will not want to go see him? Who will not want to bring him something? Who will not want to, you know, open one's heart to him? Because he's so beautiful. So this is the relationship on the transcendental platform. But the Jnanis do not come to know that. They cannot see. And they also cannot see what is the relationship between Krishna and the material energy. This is another thing that the Jnanis cannot see. That the material energy is actually an expansion of Krishna. And it's not separate from Him. And it's His. It's His. So therefore, the idea of sannyas or renunciation is misunderstood. Prabhupada questions. If Krishna owns everything, it means that you own nothing. So how can you renounce? We can only renounce something that we possess. But it is actually Krishna who is the owner. So there is nothing to renounce. Rather, we should understand what the owner wants us to do with these things. So there are two kinds of renunciations. One is called complete, and the other one is called incomplete. So complete renunciation means that we should be devoid of the sense of proprietorship. Should understand that everything belongs to Krishna. It should be put in his service, or if we are at a lower level, it should at least be offered to him, because it's not ours. It should be offered to him. And by doing that, knowledge is cultivated. Knowledge grows. This is what is called acting in the status of a spirit soul. When we fully understand that we are not this body and we are not the owner of the things that we produce. We are not the owner of the fruit of our activities. So the complete purification of the heart means that we attain our constitutional position. Prabhupada writes in the end of the purport, renunciation is complete when it is in the knowledge that everything in existence belongs to the Lord and that no one should claim proprietorship over anything. One should understand that factually nothing belongs to anyone. Then where is the question of renunciation? One who knows that everything is Krishna's property is always situated in renunciation. Since everything belongs to Krishna, everything should be employed in the service of Krishna. This perfect form of action is Krishna consciousness. So here what did Prabhupada say is, why is karma yoga superior to karma sannyas? What is the answer here? Okay, one thing is that if you renounce all actions, but knowing that the nature of the soul is to act, there is a chance to fall. So that's one defect. And then? It's incomplete. There's not a full understanding. It's incomplete renunciation. We are not supposed to stop acting. We are supposed to act as an instrument of Krishna, without possessiveness. And there is another thing Prabhupada writes, I think, that it's easier. So it's easier, it is safer, and it is more complete. Karma Yoga. Then Krishna explains what is a true sannyasi in text 3. Yeya sanitya sannyasi yona dveshti na kankshati nirdvanvo hi mahabaho sukham bandhat pramuchyate. The nitya sannyasi, one who neither hates nor desires the fruit of his activities, is known to be always renounced. Such a person, free from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage and is completely liberated, O mighty armed Arjuna. So, Krishna here says that sannyas is a matter of mentality. It's a state of consciousness. Sannyas doesn't mean to give up work. Sannyas means that we become completely, fully detached. So we have been told, here it says, na dveshti, na kankshati. So we have been told that the karmis, what they do, they are attracted. Kankshatit. You know, they want. They are attracted. They want the enjoyment. They are attracted to the fruit of their work. So it has been said, don't do that. Give up the work, the fruit. Give up the fruit. Give up the fruit. Don't be attached. Don't be attached. But here it says, na dvashti. So when they say, don't be attached to the fruit, don't be attached. They also understand we should be attached to nothing. We shouldn't be attached to work. We shouldn't be attached to the fruit. We shouldn't be attached to this body. So what is the thing that immediately the conditioned soul will do? Okay, I should not be attracted. What I should be? I should be repulsed. Dveshti means to hate, to reject. Because they said, don't accept this fruit, don't accept this fruit. So I said, okay, I reject it. This is the position of the jnani. He's rejecting. Because he knows, I shouldn't take it, so I reject, reject. But no, you should not reject, you should give to Vishnu. You should not reject the work. You should do the proper work. So, a real sannyasi is not one who stops work, but it's one who is not subject neither to attraction nor to repulsion. Because always we hear these are two sides of the same coin. Sometimes some are over-attracted and some are over-detached. But neither one nor the other has the actual proper path of action. So a real sannyasi, he has no desire for the fruit, and he has no problem with the work either. He's dedicated to duty and to his service based on the knowledge of the relationships. That everything, Prabhupada says, because he knows his constitutional position in his relationship with Krishna. So, he can act without getting the reactions. So here there is one more reason why this path is better. The word is sukham. That actually is happy. The one who is working is happy. He's happy because he's engaged. And by working in a detached manner or by working for Krishna, he becomes placed in a different state of consciousness, different from the one who always wants the fruit. And he experiences happiness. So this is good, because from, you know, happiness, satisfaction, so it's safe.
Is it working for a higher purpose?
Yeah, it's the same thing we are studying. Yes?
In this verse, text 2, this word happy sannyas, is it used just like to mean same as jnana?
As? Jnana. Yeah, karma sannyas, because this is what the jnanis do. They take karma sannyas. They stop acting.
And then in the next verse, he uses a different word, something that's also just
means, that's the next verse, no? Yeah. Yeah, it's the path of the jnana yoga.
But like, that's when we get to the next verse, like Prabhupada explains in the purport, one process is to find the root of the tree and the other is to mount the tree. So it seems from that explanation that they're actually finding the root of the tree.
They are looking for it.
And then they will act on it once they find that.
Yes. If they follow, again, it depends which guru. If they have a guru who is a personalist, then he will guide them. We said in the beginning when we studied this Sankhya Yoga that there are two types. There is the atheist Kapila and there is the Devahuti Kapila. So for those who follow the Devahuti Kapila Shiksha, they will come to the conclusion of the super soul. Because it's included in that yoga. You have all the 24 elements, and then there is the 25th, and then there is the 26th. But if you take, it depends on their good luck, you know, it depends on the desire in their heart also, whether they have dvesh for Krishna or not. So they'll get the proper guru that will guide them to the next step, which is Ashtanga Yoga and meditation on the Super Soul. Yeah. All right, so this process will make one happy. And, yes, there was a yes. Okay, so we stop here. So tomorrow we will continue with this section here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.